You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Chris McFeely, and Chris Triplett.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, joined by the amazing Chris Triplett and Chris McFeely. How's it going, gentlemen?
Not so bad. Nice. My arm hurts a bit.
Oh, sorry. So, this week, it is Fanboy Versus Adversity, as we try to actually do a show. So, a little preface. We didn't end up doing a show for 2 weeks because of holidays and things like that. And we had an amazing show last week. It was our 2010 wrap-up show. We talked about
it was incredible. We had so many special guests, and they sang a song.
I'm telling you.
I mean, I can't believe that we had Jeff Johns on.
I know.
Fantastic. Great.
You know, I mean, it was. We even had a musical number. It was amazing. Unfortunately, due to technical difficulties related to JD trying to set up a new microphone, that show is mostly gone. Yeah, the first half is almost completely unlistenable as far as my audio, and the second half is entirely unlistenable as far as Triplett and McFeely. You can't hear them at all. So someday, excerpts of that show may be released somewhere, but not here and not now. So we'll probably talk about some of the things that we talked about, because this week was super light as far as comics go. But we will talk about some of the comics and things this week. But, hey,
we have a lot of stuff from last week to talk about as well, because we didn't talk about last week's comics.
Yeah,
we didn't talk about the year that was last year.
Yeah, so we kind of hit like one.
Why we're not going back to cover everything in detail again, because we've missed out enough comics as it is at this point.
Yeah, it's gone. It's gone away. So, but anyway, it's going to be. This will be fun. So we'll rehash. Like I said, we'll go over some of the stuff that we missed. But hey, we got to do some news, because there was some biggish and kind of a surprise bit of news this week. But of course, I always turn to Chris McFeely for that. So what the heck?
Quesada out. Alonso in. Marvel appoints new editor in chief. Who the hell saw that coming? What the hell?
Yeah, I mean. What a left. I mean,
we're
it was
just sitting there eating our sandwiches or whatever it is that we geeks do of a day. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, this news just lands.
Yeah, I mean, there was no announcement of a press conference. I mean, they had all that, you know, fanfare for Fear itself. And then, you know, it was suddenly like, you know, on Twitter, Joe Quesada's like, oh, yeah, by the way, handing over the keys. You know, there you go. What? Crazy.
It's definitely, yeah. Right, he has been replaced as Quesada is stepping down from the editor-in-chief position, and he is going to the chief creative officer position, which may sound a little familiar to people, because that's what Jeff Johns became about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the person, as I understand it, that is like the person in charge of managing and like overseeing the use of Marvel's characters in other media, films, cartoons, etc. And stepping into his editor-in-chief shoes is Axel Alonso. Now, I've heard it said, this is pure hearsay, so don't take this as gospel or anything, but I've heard it said that since Quesada became, you know, creative officer, whatever, Axel has basically been doing the editor-in-chief job. And he has, he's been an editor, for actually over a decade, but, you know, cause I imagine a lot of people are going, Axel who? And, he has been, a senior editor at Marvel in, for the last decade, where he's been working on the Spider-Man books, and, he helped create the Max line. And he worked on the pretty big runs, like on the, he was a big editor over in the X family of books for a while as well. But I don't have a world of other things to actually say about him.
They're just good job.
Yeah. It's I mean, is this a case where like Quesada may be promoted to a point where he can't do much more damage to the comics? Or
is it a question or a statement?
I don't know. I mean, yes, I think.
If he wants to, you know, just, you know, kill off, I don't know, Invisible Woman or something, he can just do it, I think.
Well, I mean, I guess my hope is that maybe if he moves further up the chain, he won't have so much time to focus on what's going on in the comics, because they have their finger in a lot of different media right now as far as television, film, cartoons, things like that, and that's what he's supposed to be overseeing. At least that's my understanding of what this job description is.
Well, say whatever all else you will say about Quesada, but that has been an area that he has always done very well in. He is a good hype man, and he is a good... He under him, you know, Marvel has basically hit cinema successfully.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, almost solely under him. And, you know, in the last couple of years, we've had Marvel's best cartoons ever come out, you know, to finally challenge DC in that market. And still haven't quite mastered the art of the television series yet. But as far as cartoon and films go, those have done nothing but grow and grow as far as, under Quesada. And, you know, I mean...
And I don't know if he's, like, involved with it, but video games has actually gotten pretty good,
too. Yeah, I think video games actually count, too. Yeah, I think that counts.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, think it's supposed to be anything that's other media. Or, I mean, any media is my understanding. It's... Anything under the Marvel tag that's creative sense, he's supposed to be helming that up, as far as at least the grand overseer. But, I mean, obviously, the individual control will be disseminated below that, but he's just overseeing it.
Now, I'm not going to cry about him leaving the editor-in-chief position, but I'm not going to, you know, retroactively tar his whole run in that position with either, because he got Marvel out of a very bad point in time. He really, really reinvigorated a lot of books in a lot of areas of the company at a time when they were just clawing their way out of bankruptcy. You know, Bob Harris,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just been appointed DC's editor-in-chief recently. He got the ball rolling. I know it was Bill Jamis and Joe Quesada together that really did the big stuff, you know. But then I think more and more, as Quesada's been in charge, he's allowed his personal views of how things should be to come in and interfere with things like Spider-Man and what have you, or the way it's given us Civil War and things like that. And this, you know, I mean, I think it's time for him to go, but I'm not going to say that he didn't do... Like, on the whole, like, overall, he did good things. And, you know, he definitely, like, under, you know, Marvel's reprint and graphic novel department started to completely kick ass under him. And, you know, while we may look at a lot of the big things that happened in the universe, like the state of the event. I mean, yes, you know, a lot of bitching was done about the Avengers, but under Quesada, it was propelled to Marvel's premiere book. And a lot of bitching was done about Spider-Man, but since then, you know, It's
awesome now.
Yeah,
exactly. And, you know, but those are the big things. And then, like, on the small front, you know, we've had so many fantastic miniseries and books like, you know, She-Hulk or whatever, just as a for instance, like, of B-lister characters who would not have got the chance a couple of years beforehand. And new things like Runaways and Young Avengers that have come in and really made their mark, you know. You know, it's been, you know, as much as, like, maybe the old hard part, the hard part deep inside of us complains about things, it's been a good time under Quesada for the most part. And this is the thing about Alonso, is that I just really don't know what to expect from him at all. You know, it's not like somebody's going, oh my God, they have promoted. I mean, when Quesada was promoted, Quesada had been doing the Marvel Edge thing, like not Marvel Edge, Marvel Knights. You know, and when it is one of Daredevil with Kevin Smith, you know, like real big, daring reboots of things that put characters like Daredevil back on the map. And, you know, Punisher was another Marvel Knights book under Garth Ennis, you know, things that really fixed these characters, put them back on the map. And so that, you know, he had a lot of good credit off of the back of it, was the idea of, like, building something back up, giving it a fresh start and just making it work again. And what is, you know... So, but you don't get that with Alonso. It's like, he just doesn't seem to have a big enough name to be somebody who will be in that editor-in-chief position for any length of time. Or, I mean, you know, maybe he'll make it his own and make his name by being editor-in-chief, but it usually works the other way around, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we make fun of Joe, but, you know, he can do more than just draw covers, so.
Yeah. I hope it ain't got nothing to do with Spider-Man, though, whatever he's doing.
Yeah, we probably should just want to keep him away from that.
Yeah. So, well, that'll be interesting. I mean, like I said, I think it'll be interesting to see how that develops. You know, whether this is going to be in like an interim without being called an interim editor-in-chief, yeah, or what's going to happen. So,
we'll see. It's just going to be really, really weird not seeing Joe Quesada's big cheeseburger munching head at the forefront of every Marvel press conference now.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to miss that.
Other news following a very distinct second, and the only other piece of news that we have this week is the one that we pretty much called when we reported it the first time out was Warner Brothers shelves plans for Wonder Woman TV revival.
Oh, David Kelly's
proposed Wonder Woman television series has been shelved. Sources say it was a matter of unfortunate timing.
Well, I mean, and I'm not shocked by this. I mean, well, for several reasons I'm not. In particular, because they had announced the Raven series just, yeah, you know, what,
well,
2 weeks ago.
Well, predicting pretty much the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that essentially, though, this, I mean, they're not going to throw out, like, three series at the same time. And so I'd imagine that the Raven thing is going to be the replacement for what they're going to do with Wonder Woman, which will probably be far more palatable. Like I said, if they put it up against, like, Supernatural and some of the other shows that you see on CW, which is where I assume it would go. But yeah, Wonder Woman really wouldn't fit into that mix.
You know, it's nothing against Wonder Woman. I feel she could take another crack at television safely, but
I just want to see someone in an American bikini. I mean, what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean,
maybe it's time for Baywatch to return with an American bikini.
We can't even get Superman in the tights on his own show. You know what I mean?
Oh, maybe at the end of this season.
Oh yeah, did you see the teaser image?
No, there's a new one, isn't there? I read something about that.
Oh yeah, that one with him in this reflected in the big metal S.
The big metal S, and in the reflection at the bottom, you see him wearing the suit.
Oh, good.
But you don't see him wearing the suit. You just see, like, the bottom half of the suit or something.
Again, the only reason I care about the series is for the other characters. I'm still not big on.
I've said it before. I think I've said it before on the show, but I'm still calling it now. And if I'm wrong, I'll be very happy to see if I'm wrong. But final episode, Darkseid's going to possess that Lex Luthor clone. So we might get some Omega Beams out of it. There'll be no real Darkseid. He won't look like Darkseid. He's just going to be that possessed Lex Luthor clone. And he might look like Darkseid for about 3 seconds at the penultimate moment of a really unsatisfying fight sequence just before Clark beats him with one punch.
Oh, come on. That's every episode. That's like too safe of a bet. You know? Yeah.
Specifically, it's the Dark Force will possess the Lex Luthor clone and he won't look anything like Darkseid bet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not expecting.
I'm willing to bet they're going to recycle the Doomsday special effects for Darkseid, and that will be the 1 second that we see.
Oh, my God.
I could see Omega Beams happening. I could see big Lancey Omega Beams shooting out.
And that's when he flies, because he has to fly away to avoid the Mega Beams.
Yeah, he's going to fly.
Yeah. I think so.
He might drag. He'll grab the Lex Luthor clone and he'll fly him into space. And his body will explode. And for a moment, there will be the Dark Force there and it will look like Darkseid and then it will dissipate.
Okay, this isn't an HBO series. This is CW.
Or is it like Fantastic Four, where the second Fantastic Four movie where it like sort of was shaped sort of like Galactus?
Yeah.
In silhouette for half a second.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have too long to go to find out. Just somebody let me know whenever that Booster Gold and Blue Beetle episode is on.
Yes.
Because I will watch that.
We wants it.
Yeah.
He needs it.
That's all we wants is, but I will watch it.
Yes. So, well, hey, I heard a rumor that comic books came out.
Not many, actually.
So I assume that our review
That's
mix...
It's a dad media shirt. It's all digital now, isn't it?
I know. Well, that was... What was... There was something else that was pretty big that was day and date this past week.
God, I wish I could summon up the energy to care.
But, yeah. Oh, I know you're not really excited.
It might have been the death of Spider-Man, was it?
Yeah, that's going to be day and date.
That's going to be day and date, yeah.
Yeah.
I really hit that piece of terminology as well. What does that even mean, day and date?
Well, I think it's a carryover from video media, because when back in like the VHS and video days, there was the lag time between when something would go on DirecTV or not DirecTV, but like direct viewing, like off a cable, and then when it was released from DVD. So typically, if something was released to video or DVD, there would be a lag time of a week or so. But then they used to say, I think the terminology came from there originally, because if it went up for like direct viewing same day, then they would say it's day and date, meaning that the day and date of release for that is the same as the DVD day and date.
You, with all of your knowledge.
They also use it in video games, don't they? Like multiple console release video games, say.
Yeah, it may come from
PS3
that
and
too.
Xbox.
Yeah, if it was same, because there used to be sometimes there would be lag between those as well.
Yeah, there'd be like an exclusive on one system, like maybe for like a year or something, and then the game would come out on the other system.
Right. I don't know that for sure. I mean, I have a vague memory of that. Like I said, I used to work at a video store years ago. So
me too. By the way.
Blockbuster, man.
Speaking of working in a store, I wanna actually publicize this thing I found this week. Some people may know it already, but this is a website for you guys to visit. You put this in the show notes or something. It's ourvaluedcustomers.blogspot.com.
Is this like LOL Cats or something?
No, this is a series of one-panel comics, just a talking head illustration caricatures of the ridiculous things in real life said in a comic show.
Nice.
I know. If any of you have ever wondered as to my pain, if you thought I've exaggerated some scenarios, just read this guy's blog. He works in a comic shop, and he makes cartoons of the stupid, stupid people things say.
You know, they could almost do one just off of your Twitter feed.
Yeah.
I don't know. Some of the things that are on this website, I have heard. Some of them are way beyond me. But some of these things, I have heard. You know, there's one that just really made me laugh, which is a guy. You have any comics where Spider-Man just gets the shit kicked out of him? Fucking hit Spider-Man!
Every issue.
I've heard that. Yeah. I've heard that, you know?
Wow.
So there is definite truth in these. So that's ourvaluedcustomers.blogspot.com. Check that out, folks.
Nice.
After the show.
After the show. Not during the show, because right now you're listening to the show and you want to hear our exciting reviews of the comics that came out over the last 2 to 3 weeks.
Do we want to talk the comics from the last 2-3 weeks now, or do we want to just give everybody who missed it, which is everybody, a rundown of the 2010 from last week to start off?
Yeah, I guess we could give a quick rundown. I think we're going to have to be more abbreviated.
Oh,
obviously,
just like I mean, you know, we talked about our favorite books, you know, and obviously mine, I give the nod to Fantastic Four.
Yeah, and that's...
you get today.
I think that is what I said, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
That's the only thing I've read all of, I think, from all of last year. But I mean, that Fantastic Four run was pretty amazing. So I think I second you.
And Triplett, you talked about...
Yeah, and I third it, definitely.
And we also talked about Batman a little as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I give it the nod because this was the year... that it all opened up before me, you know. I can't in good conscience give it because I didn't read it this year really properly and sit down, buy it, and read it. So that's why Fantastic Four takes it from me. And actually, even if I had it, I still would take it anyway.
Well, Batman's, you know, what was great about Batman is it was like the first time in a long time in which Batman was the first comic I read out of the pile. You know, Batman and Robin, it was like, if it came out, I was like, yeah, I got to read this. I got to find out what batshit insanity is happening in this issue. You know,
you know, I have a similar reaction, but it's the opposite for me. I always save my good comics for the end. I don't know why, but it's like if I have a series of comics, but so in the similar respect, I would always like save those for the end because it was like I wanted those like my special little topper, you know.
Yeah, I like to save something good for the end, but for that book, it was always like if I only have like a second in the day to read a comic, that's the comic I'm gonna read.
I try and divvy them up myself, you know, try and not go out on a sour note or anything. But, you know, if there's something that's totally awesome, then I gotta read it first. It's like I know I'll be reading Fantastic Four first at the end of this month.
Hell yes.
Yes.
Why, I mean, if I'm just sitting there reading my comics, you never know who could break into my house, come running up to me and tell me which member of the Fantastic Four died. If only I had read that comic first, I would cry.
Yeah, you're really going to have to, like, get that issue, turn off the internet, and just, you know, like, go into information deprivation mode until you read it.
Because I'm not going to get reading that. I mean, I may have to, in the UK now, the books are going to be delivered to stores on Tuesday to go on sale on Wednesday, and I don't work Tuesdays. So I'm going to have to go into work on Tuesdays just to see that book, because I'm going to have to be at work all through Wednesday before I get reading that comic. And there's a computer in front of me at work.
Yeah, and there's no way that's not going to be up.
Yeah.
So.
That is going to be.
You're
going
to have to go in.
I always forget, y'all are ahead of us, right? So technically, y'all would.
Well, we will be.
It's going to be.
They'll be shipping to stores on Tuesdays. But I think I also heard that they'd be shipping to stores on Tuesdays in America as well.
Well, they will be, but I'm saying as far as, you know, when you all will get them versus when we get them. So wouldn't it be it's a couple hours ahead, right?
I mean, you could have British, you know, in the UK, you could have people, you know, standing outside the shop at 9 in the morning to buy the new comics on that day. So that is, you know, whatever, a maximum of 8 hours ahead of somebody in the, you know, a minimum of what? 5 hours before somebody in America could buy it off the shelf.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to, man.
They don't have it plastered all over newspapers the way they did when Spider-Man Unmasked or Captain America died or Bruce Wayne announced Batman Incorporated, you know? But they're putting it in a plastic baggie. So I can't believe Marvel is going to blow it across newspapers.
No, I don't think they will.
I'm really, really seriously concerned about this in a way that should be reserved for global warming or the socio-political climate of the world.
There's important questions, you know, facing our world, and we're sitting here and I was like, how can we keep from getting spoiled on who dies from the Fantastic Four? This is important, okay?
Like, these are the topics of 2010. Secret Six, actually. That's another one we need to give the
Yes. Yeah. Cats in the Cradle. How can you not?
Seriously.
I can't
say it's absolutely the best book of 2010 because the reptile brain was a bit meh. But Cats in the Cradle was this year, and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, I, you know.
Cats in the Cradle got you reading it, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's what got me into Secret Six, and now I can't not read Secret Six. I mean, I've been poo-pooing Action Comics, and I bought it specifically.
Don't poo-poo Action Comics.
Yeah, just awesome. Not that interested. But, you know, I mean, it looks like they're okay, great. But, you know, I bought this issue, and who knows, I may start reading Action now based on stuff from Secret Six. So, yeah, I mean, awesome. It is kind of we'll talk about it, but it was kind of weird to read.
See, you shouldn't poo-poo Action Comics because Superman's not been in it in like you know, 6 or 7 months or something. He's not even mentioned in it anymore. Lex Luthor doesn't even care about Superman.
It does have that going for it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I hate Superman. Speaking of Superman, big changes for him, ish. Not punching things anymore, but anyway, we had Blackest Night and End of Siege, which I think we all agreed that Siege was sort of crap.
Yeah.
Siege was written to serve a purpose, as I've said many times.
Siege gave us the Avengers back, my Avengers, but that was about it.
Yeah.
killed off a character that should have been gone.
Yep.
A long time ago.
Who, Loki? No, Loki should still be around, which he is.
Loki. Yeah, Loki came back. That's, you know, no, you didn't need to give up.
Thankfully, Loki came back. I was talking about the still century. Dead. Century.
Still dead, and hopefully
yes.
Thank
for
goodness.
A good long time.
So,
our favorite writers kind of mirrored our best issues, best series, really. I know I gave it. I voted for Jonathan Hickman, which is, you know, in addition to Fantastic Four, he's also been serving up the Great Shield and the Secret Warriors, which was off the boil for the part earlier this year, but in the last couple of months has been kicking some mad ass. Nick Fury is a stone cold mother, and Ultimate Thor has been enjoyable as well. This has been a real year of Hickman because this guy just came storming in out of nowhere. In the wake of like Civil War, just he co-wrote Secret Warriors, which they had to, which they attached Bendis's name to, purely to sell it. You know, by Bendis's own admission, he was doing nothing with that book. He was just credited for the creation of the team, but they were attaching his name to it to sell it. And you know, now the guy who was writing that 2 years ago is now doing three other books at Marvel right now, and you know, who's saying a bad word about him, frankly.
Not us, that's for sure.
Not this show. Definitely my writer of the year. But I mean, we also said Grant Morrison, and for me personally, I give Grant Morrison the tip because this was just the year where, you know, the clouds parted and the ray of light came down, and suddenly I got it.
I mean, he made Final Crisis a little bit better. That's amazing. That right there gets an award for something.
Yeah, I mean, Final Crisis, I haven't changed my opinion of it yet, but when I suddenly, reading the final issue of Return of Bruce Wayne and the final issue of his run on Batman and Robin, and suddenly just comprehending it, like, you know, that fucking 17th turn of the Rubik's Cube, and suddenly everything made, well, not literally everything, but suddenly I just comprehended it on a level I just didn't before. It has prompted me to go back and get all of his stuff in trade paperback, so when I get back to Final Crisis, maybe it'll change my opinion of it. I doubt it, to be honest. But, you know, the fact that I'm going back and reading any of this at all really is a surprise to me, because I've never loved his work. I've never hated his work, except for Final Crisis. You know, I never paid that much attention to his Batman. It registered with me, but I wasn't going out of my way to follow it. And given that I actively hated the one piece of that cycle of stories that he was telling that I did spend money on and sit down and read in full, I never really would have thought that I would be going back and reading all of this stuff now. So, you know, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I am the dog in this.
I think the big feat for me, and it kind of goes back to something we talked about as far as our favorite series, is that Grant Morrison got me liking the idea of Batman and Robin.
Mm.
Because that I so thoroughly enjoyed that Batman and Robin series, that and the way that he was able to write, you know, Dick and Damian as far as their partnership and how they function together, that it got me reading that. I mean, that's on my pull list now and everything. So I think in that respect, I think I really like what Morrison did. And aside from all the Batman stuff. And I think, but another, you know, writer obviously that I had to put on there again was Gail Simone because of her work on Secret Six as well as Birds of Prey. I think I can appreciate that series is good to people who are invested in it. They just, like, even though it didn't really pop for me, I guess.
You know, somebody that I didn't mention last time, but who I really want to, is actually Jeff Parker as well. He of Agents of Atlas, currently writing the Red Hulk series as well. And Fred Van Lent as well, Lent, whoever, who's been on Spider-Man and the Incredible Hercules, and just like all these guys from the same guys I would mention in the same breath as Dan Slott, who
is awesome.
Yes. People of the newer generation of writers who have this vested love of history and who actually know their history versus people who just try to skirt around history. So your big guys like your Millers and your Bendis and whatever, who may pay only lip service to history or may use generalized versions of historical concepts. Guys like Parker Van Lent, Greg Pak being another one, and Dan Slott. These guys know how to use continuity and write fun stories. You know, Dan Slott was doing this at a time when fun was a dirty word. You know, he was doing She-Hulk, which was so very unlike anything else that was coming out at the time, but which is now much more comparable to the stuff that these writers are doing on Hercules, on Agents of Atlas.
He was doing She-Hulk, wasn't everything just kind of like the... Was it like Avengers Disassembled time when he did that?
Yeah,
everything everybody was dying and depressed, and the Avengers were in turmoil, and we didn't know
where... Avengers Disassembled happened a couple of issues after She-Hulk started.
Yeah.
So,
it was a nice breath of fresh air.
It was when the grimness was really settling in. We were really settling into that period of grimness that would hold sway until Siege and Age of Heroes, really. So, you know, I didn't mention those guys last week, but I definitely want to give the nod to each of them as well.
And then as far as artists, I think we need to...
But I don't even remember who I voted for.
Yeah, I don't either.
Oh, no, of course I friggin' remember. It was J.H. Williams.
Yes.
And Stuart Immonen, who is awesome.
Yes. Yeah. Not much more to say. Well, I'll repeat my spiel on J.H. Williams, whose name I got right this week. Yes.
My goodness. He's not Freddie Williams.
No, he's not Freddie Williams. Freddie Williams drew something this week, though, but I forget what. J.H. Williams, who's doing Detective Comics, or did Detective Comics when Batwoman was on it, doing the new Batwoman series now, is... astounding. He is in an industry that is 70 years old, 80 years old nearly. He is still doing amazing new things that you wouldn't have just, you know, comics sort of are settled into their ways at the minute. And you would be forgiven for thinking that there isn't any really new way, innovative ways to tell a story sometimes, you know. And J.H. Williams just comes in there and kicks you in the balls because he's just doing things artistically that are incredible. Like, his comics look like no other comic you'll see. And, you know, if you haven't looked at any of that stuff, for God's sake, go and do that. I mean, I would say pick up the new Batwoman series, but... since he's writing it, and I don't really know what he's like on a writing level, it's kind of more of an unknown. So what I would tell you to do is go and buy the Batwoman Elegy hardcover.
Now, wouldn't it be awesome if he like got really good at writing and he also had his art? My God, he'd be unstoppable.
Yeah, everybody else could just quit.
Yeah.
Stuart Immonen as well, as Triplett says, definitely has been doing a great job over on New Avengers, and Marvel are really recognizing this guy's talent as well, because he's going to be drawing Fear itself.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
Marvel's crossover event that happens later next year, because we mentioned that in the news last week, but we've lost that as well.
Yeah. Oh, one writer that we missed, of course, we have to mention is Geoff Johns, because, I mean, you know, even
it's a given.
Spike,
it's an
obvious given,
but... Yeah, it's a gift for a reason, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even Spike TV recognizes that Geoff Johns is...
The Scream Awards?
Yes, the Scream Awards.
Oh, yes.
I mean, the Scream Awards are considered to be the authority for great comic...
absolutely.
...opinion. Yeah, anyway.
I mean, it must be, since it's on every cover of a book he writes.
Do you think he cringes? I wonder what his opinion of that is. I wonder if he cringes every time... Like, he picks up, you know, and looks at his issue of Flash, and there's that little tag at the bottom where it's like, oh, great. Scream Awards. I'm proud.
You would wonder. Limited series-wise, we talked about some of our favorite minis and things that have happened this year, and I got to give it to Taskmaster.
Yes.
Which is the best superhero miniseries I have read this year. And that is the good Fred Van Lent on the writing as well. So it's the fact that I forgot to mention him as a writer last time and then proceeded to pick that as my favorite miniseries.
Yeah, that series
that was a fantastic series.
Really good. I mean, I think it it had those elements of what makes a good mini in some ways, in that it doesn't change anything that came before it, nor does it have to affect anything that comes after it. And yet, it adds a level of interest and complexity to a character that otherwise wouldn't get that treatment.
Mm.
And it plants the seeds that if a writer in the future does want to use that, they can. They can play on the element. But that it, you know, so many times you get a mini or you see a mini and the instinct is to, I'm going to do something really amazing and something that's really going to alter and change this character. And I don't know if that's always the way to go on a mini. I mean, because I think you're sort of entrusted with a little bit of the essence of that character, but also keeping true to that history. And if you come in and really try to wipe the slate clean of everything that came before, I think you're doing a disservice to the development that went into that character, and you're also forgetting that, you know, you got four issues, you know.
Mm.
Those four issues shouldn't really alter the entire course of a character. It can, if that's what editorial wants to do, but I think if it's really good, it does like this did, which is, you know, sort of leave the character where it started and yet take them on an amazing journey that you can, you know, use later if you want. If not, you can set it to the side and you can move on with the character as they're known. It doesn't affect that.
But such a great balance of solid real drama and very funny comedy as well.
Oh, yeah.
Without feeling like any kind of really drastic tonal shift.
No.
Right,
and that is so hard to do a lot of times, especially in comics, because it tends to be one or the other. It tends to be either really funny or it tends to be really dramatic. And it's hard to strike that balance where you have those moments. I mean, just to be able to juxtapose that red shirt character and have the organization, you know, called MILF, and then, you know, not a few pages later, you have the whole ordeal, you know, the end of the story with Mercedes and having to take everything back where it was and her still, you know, taking care of him and everything. Just, you know, that's hard to do and hard to do well in the way that you can really laugh at that one element and then a few pages later, you know, little dirt in the eye, you know.
Yeah, that was probably the best superhero miniseries of, not probably, we're sitting here saying it was the best superhero mini of 2010. We've had a couple of other really good ones kick off in the closing months of this year as well, like Loki, you know. Yes. Most definitely. But Taskmaster. Here's something else, actually, that came out this year. Well, three of its four issues came out this year. And you guys didn't read it, but I was raving about this back in the first half of this year. Was Age of Reptiles, The Journey. I don't think I look forward to the new issue of a comic that was coming out as much as I did with every issue of Age of Reptiles, which is just, like, the most amazing synthesis of art and story, all coming from the pen and mind of one man, Ricardo Delgado. All done completely in silence, without words, just, and yet so much story and humanity, despite it being I've said it before, Age of Reptiles is a silent comic about the lives of dinosaurs, and they're not anthropomorphized dinosaurs, they're not cartoon dinosaurs, they don't think, it's all entirely silent, they don't think, they don't talk, this is the story of wild animals, and yet it is so human, so amazingly filled with just stuff that will really sear you. Searing humanity was one of the quotes I believe I read used in direction of it. Like, so inhuman and so amazingly human at the same time. I remember whenever I first read there was just going to be another Age of Reptiles miniseries, and I just plotzed. And the Age of Reptiles omnibus, collecting that miniseries and the previous two Age of Reptiles miniseries from the 90s, is being released in the next month. So I strongly encourage everybody to check that out. It is very much unlike anything else you will read. So, yeah, you should read that.
So who do we say, I mean, as far as, and kind of, I guess, close it out, and this will be an odd and difficult question, but who do we think won this year between DC and Marvel? I mean, who really...
Oh, God.
Who, I mean, did one really outshine the other, or is it just...
They both did a lot of good stuff, and a lot of bad things, too.
Mm.
But I don't know.
Well, you know, we talked about our disappointments last week. And we haven't brought them back up, but most of our disappointments came from DC. The new Booster Gold creative team, Straczynski on Wonder Woman and Superman being
Oh, God, now you remind me. I totally forgot, and I yeah. You reminded me.
Oh.
You know, I mean, it yeah. seems like...
A lot of it was DC, not Marvel. It was DC. I forgot.
You know, that
a
is...
lot of what DC did this year seemed like steps in the wrong direction. I mean, yes, they've done this holding the line at $2.99, the price thing, and they tried the secondary features to justify the increased price cost, which Marvel didn't do. I mean, Marvel really didn't justify the increased price cost, but purely on a creative level, with the advent particularly of the Heroic Age. Creatively, Marvel seems to have taken more steps in the right direction than I think DC did this year. Because DC hasn't done a lot of new stuff that has really blown anybody away this year. I mean, the big new creative steps they've taken were, you know, Straczynski on Wonder Woman.
We all know how that went.
And Brightest Day has
Marvel's
been very...
Marvel's done better to get me to pick up new books, like New Avengers, Secret Avengers, you know, whatnot. DC, I don't think, have picked up as much new stuff this year.
I mean,
they haven't been setting the world on fire. I mean, Brightest Day has been entertaining. It hasn't been any D2, whereas the superior of the two monthly, bi-monthly books, you know, Generation Lost, really does seem to have floated by under the radar. I know it's gone by under my radar, you know.
Yeah.
I would not know nearly as much about what's going on in that book if it wasn't for talking about it on here.
God, all the potential of JMS, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah. Oh my God. Brightest Day didn't really bring any kind of new era of things. Where Marvel was doing this Heroic Age, hey, everything's shiny and happy and look, Brightest Day has happened, but there hasn't been a world of knock-on. You know, the best thing we got out of DC was The Flash. You know, that was the best new thing to happen in DC in the last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's about the only really new, notable, exciting thing to have been spawned by Brightest Day. Whereas you look over at Marvel and you see the creative success that they're enjoying with the Avengers books. I mean, the main Avengers book is getting better and better after an admittedly wobbly start. And New Avengers has just been great. Avengers Academy has launched the Children's Crusade, Hickman's Fantastic Four. pardon me, I'm going to lose my voice a little bit.
They're actually going to kill off one of the... Deadpool comics, they have five series of four going, that's
a great creative choice, actually knocking the amount of Deadpool we've been going through on the head, because we went into this year at the height of Deadpool Mania.
It was five
at the time, but that one of those was always about to end and be replaced with
a
little overlap.
So there are five monthly Deadpool comics.
There's Deadpool. There was Deadpool. Deadpool Merc with a Mouth.
How the hell did I miss that?
Deadpool Merc with a Mouth, which was going to be replaced with Deadpool Core, but they overlapped for a little while. Deadpool Team Up, and God, I'm sure there was another one.
I knew Deadpool was popular, but I didn't know he was that popular.
There were a lot of mini-series and one-shots. And, of course, they had that month of Deadpool variant covers and that famous Deadpool variant to Siege and Deadpool guest starring in everything. We entered the year at the height of Deadpool Mania, and now as we're coming out of the year, it is very obvious that Marvel have observed the overexposure of the character. I mean, they're running an ad in the comics, for goodness sake, that's saying, which of these do we need to cancel?
Yeah.
The word is that both Team Up and Core are being cancelled.
Well,
I think they've waited too long to make a Deadpool movie, and I don't think they can conceivably make a Deadpool movie at this point.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of things that's going against that. I mean, one is the obvious, which is that the character's been overexposed, right. And I don't think the public is even ready for that character. Two, you know, they had planned on having Ryan Reynolds helm that, and now I think he's going to be way too tied to Green Lantern. For that to really be effective. And Yeah, I mean, do we need a Deadpool movie? I would love to have one. Don't get me wrong. I still like Deadpool, and I purposely not read all of this Deadpool popularity nonsense because I want to continue to like that character. So I'm going to wait until he drifts back into the shadows, and then I'll start reading again.
There's nothing wrong with that character, but I can think of a million other Marvel characters I'd rather get a movie from first before him.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And it won't work. I mean, my thing is like part of you talk about comic as a medium, and part of what makes Deadpool work is the fact that he is a comic book character. The fact that he can have two different thought bubbles talking to
each
other.
But that's only a recent invention of Deadpool. That's only something that Daniel Way has thrown onto the new Deadpool. Everything does it now, and it actually really annoys me because Joe Kelly didn't need to piss around with this. Joe Kelly's Deadpool is still the best Deadpool. And I'll tell anybody who's looking for a Deadpool book and is willing to spend the money on the Deadpool classic, that's the best Deadpool.
But I mean, it's kind of integral as far as... And, I mean, not even the two thought bubbles, but even one... And even going back to some of the in-joke and stuff, you can't get some of those things if you're not really in... It's almost insider stuff. Some of the stuff that makes
it cool. Well, I don't know. I'm playing Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions at the minute, and I just finished last night the level with Deadpool. And they really...
I haven't got that yet.
They really made the change over very... Ultimate Deadpool.
He's Ultimate Deadpool, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. But they you know, instead of talking about comic book things, he was just talking about video game things, you know. So whenever there's a sequence in that, whenever you have this, it's a race sequence. You have to outrace a tidal wave of webbing from oil rig to oil rig. He just keeps appearing on flashing video screens over the top and delivering commentary like it was a horse race, talking about, oh, going to lose this level, coming up fast behind on shaky thumbs and sweaty controllers taking the lead. They were really able to transfer the character.
Oh, talking about Deadpool and video games, Marvel vs. Capcom 3, doesn't he have a move where he hits you with his life bar?
Probably, yeah. I believe I did.
I think that's awesome if that's true. I think he does.
Even his inclusion in that game is coming a bit late.
Yeah.
So.
But I heard Howard the Duck was in it.
Oh, well, yeah, I heard that too. She-Hulk's in it? Oh, my God. I got so excited when that happened.
I heard MODOK is in it as well.
MODOK's in it. MODOK looks awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to play it.
So
right,
I think,
well, that's 2010. I think we've spent an hour on that. So let's talk about the first week of 2011.
Yeah. Well, maybe and just also, a little bit of that last week of 2010.
Yes.
All right, so we'll go into review mode.
Barricade 64 says in the chat, I want my Luke Cage movie with him going around saying Sweet Christmas and Jive Turkey.
Isn't that guy from the Old Spice commercial, isn't he wanting to do that?
I heard that, but you know who it should be? It should be, I've totally forgotten his name.
Terry Crews.
Terry Crews.
Okay.
Terry Crews.
The dad from Everybody Hates Chris.
I think
footballer.
I know.
Big, huge guy. Could really act and did comedy very well. He should also play Roadblock in G.I. Joe 2.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Yes,
so,
anyway,
Triplet, what do you want to grab and talk about from last week?
You guys talk about whatever. I got a huge stack here, so you just talk about whatever, and I'll just talk about some stuff you don't.
Okay.
Crap, what happened last week?
I assume we'll let McFeely talk about Fantastic Four. I'm just going to leave that over there.
Was that last week?
Week before last, but we didn't
about
talk about
it.
What about Avengers number 8? Was that last week?
Yeah, but talk away. Go ahead.
I mean, have you guys read Avengers? Did you read it?
I have, yes. Yep, read it this week.
Okay. I mean, there's not much. I mean, it's basically continuing the story with, I believe, is it Red Hood? Is that who that guy is?
The Hood.
The Hood. I'm sorry. It's not Red Hood. Red Hood is a
Red
DC
Hood,
character. Yeah. is stealing the Infinity Gems. I guess he's reassembling the Infinity Gauntlet or something. And we found out that the Illuminati, or maybe you guys already knew this, but I didn't know it, that the Illuminati split them up. And,
that was the New Avengers Illuminati miniseries.
Yeah,
revealed they had the gems.
So they split him up, and I guess each member of the Illuminati kept one, and it looks like he's captured two at this point, I think. Mm-hmm. Power, which he used to beat the bloody hell out of the Red Hulk, which was the only good thing about the last issue.
That was awesome.
And this issue kind of recaps that, because it kind of like, I don't know if it's like the same exact panels or something, but you see him beating the bloody hell out of the Red Hulk again in this issue. But this one pretty much starts off with almost kind of like going back to like the whole Illuminati meetings that they used to have. And it looks like Tony is getting them to come back because he wants to find out what's going on with the other Infinity Gems, asking all the members if they, you know, still have their gems and whatnot. So, like, everybody shows up. Like, Doctor Strange is there, and Namor, and Professor X, and Reed Richards shows up. But Black Bolt doesn't show up, which, and I didn't know this, shows what good of a comic reader I am. The Black Bolt's dead.
When did I assume that must have happened over in Realm of Kings.
I don't know. So he doesn't show up, but his wife Medusa does. And so, you know, they're just kind of like, you know, it's a talky comic. It's basically just them all talking for most of the issue.
There is at one point a flashback within a flashback.
Oh, where was that at?
Whenever Tony describes in a flashback the Red Hulk breaking into Avengers Tower, and then through his flashback, him getting beaten up by the
Hulk. Oh, that's where it came in. Okay, yeah. That's messed up. But yeah, I mean, it's basically they're just trying to, you know, get, you know, everything and find out what's going on and who that they don't even know that the Hood's got the Infinity Gems. They don't know who it is, do they? Mm. They're just trying to figure it out. Red Hulk basically
tells
them.
Like many members of last issue's reading audience.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know. I mean, I don't know anything about that character. And if he didn't have a hood on, how was I supposed to know he was the Hood? You know?
You should go and read some of one of the two Hood miniseries. That would be well worth your time.
Yeah. But, yeah, so basically they go to, what is this place? It's the place where the Inhumans
used to be.
Yeah, where the Inhumans lived. And I guess they're looking for evidence as to who's taken Black Bolt's Infinity Gem. And, what happens at the end of it? Oh, the other Avengers.
Oh, that was awesome. Maria Hill.
Basically, and we have a conversation. It's like Steve Rogers and everybody.
Everybody has found out about the Illuminati.
Yeah.
Mm.
That was holy crap. I mean, I was like, that is awesome. I really want to see what happens next.
So next issue looks like it's Avengers versus the Secret Avengers versus the New Avengers.
Also, I love the thing's little earmuffs.
Yeah.
Everybody's got their winter gear on. So for most characters, that seems to involve gloves and balaclavas. But Spidey's pulled on a little beanie hat and the thing has some earmuffs.
Yeah. So yeah, next issue should be good.
And this enjoyed this issue.
Yeah, this issue wasn't bad. It's just that, again, it's like this is the comic where, like you were saying, like, you know, like a flashback within a flashback. You know, it seems to recycle lots of stuff, you know, because, like, they even did that in previous issues. You know what I mean?
Mm. Well, I mean, there's nothing in here that's actually recycled. There's none of the art's actually recycled. The only fight with the Hulk last issue we got was a page of him punching him.
Yeah,
and we actually skipped over the fight, and I maintain that it's deliciously cathartic to actually see the Red Hulk get the shit beat out of him.
But I mean, it kind of feels like, okay, like this issue we find out some stuff, but you know, like in previous, like the early Avengers issues, it's like it's kind of moving really slow. You know, I mean, because we've moved ahead a little bit, but we haven't like jumped ahead. What I feel like two issues should be, for some reason, I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
No, no, no. I've been enjoying this more than the first two issues of the first story arc.
I enjoyed it.
Because Wonder Man hasn't popped up and randomly done something that has no bearing on the plot.
Yeah.
So that everybody can then be distracted by fucking Apocalypse dropping it.
I can't wait for Wonder Man to show back up again, just so we can say he's a dick again.
He is a dick.
But that's Avengers. You know, it's okay. I wouldn't crazy about it, but you know, it's a good book. What else came out last week?
All sorts of stuff.
Green Lantern 61 came out, but I'll let JD talk about that. He's the Green Lantern guy.
Oh, okay.
How about How about Action Comics number 896? Was it?
There you go.
Yes. Yeah. Go ahead.
See, I kind of wanted to talk about this one anyway because you said you bought it, didn't you?
Jim? Yes, we've all got this.
I just bought it.
Oh, did all three of you? Okay, all of us got it. Okay. Awesome. Well, this is probably like the first issue that you guys have read of Action. So, what do you think about Action Comics?
It read like a Secret Six issue written by someone not Gail Simone.
Yeah, basically.
It's probably not the best issue to like to come into his Action Comics because it basically is just a Secret Six story with a little bit of Lex Luthor on the side is what it looks like.
It seems to have very little to actually do with whatever's going on in Secret in Action Comics right now.
Yeah. See, because like the previous issue, which I don't know if you guys read it or not, but it was all about Lex Luthor and Vandal Savage, you know, kind of their history. And how before Vandal Savage even met Lex Luthor, like, you know, centuries before, he knew who he was because there's some sort of prophecy or something that he's got to fulfill for him. And then, like, the whole issue was about him meeting him in different periods in the DC comic universe and then just him kind of trying to trick Lex Luthor into helping him. And Lex Luthor just kind of, like, you know, ignoring him the whole time throughout DC history. And, you know, him just basically getting pissed off and saying, hey, I'm going to go to Lex Tower, and I'm just going to threaten to blow up his tower if he doesn't give me what I want. And that's how this issue starts. He's in the tower, and he's holding him hostage. But actually, the issue kind of starts with Secret Six coming into the rescue, and then sort of like a flashback of why Secret Six is there. And we get the little meeting between Lex and, what's her name?
Scandal.
Scandal, yeah. Scandal. And them basically coming to an agreement over something. We're not sure exactly what it is, but Lex basically saying, if you help me, then you can have this, you know, showing her something. But, I read this comic, but I'm trying to remember exactly what happened. I remember a lot of fighting.
That's the body of a lot of the comic, is everybody fights.
I think it was basically just a big fight. I remember Lois... robot freaking out and turning into a giant gun-armed robot woman, you know?
there was an exchange between her and Mr. Mind, too.
Yeah, that was some of the more interesting stuff, and it means very little to me.
Yeah, that goes back to, like, I think the first issue of Action.
Mr. Mind
showed up, yeah. But, yeah.
Mr. Mind's taken over Amanda Waller, and it's been observed that back during the first issue, when she hit one of Mr. Mind, when Lois Robot hit one of Mr. Mind's henchmen, it infected him with nanites that actually prompted him to dangle Lex Luthor over the edge of the building, which is
We're beginning to look and see that the Lois Robot might not be all what she appears to be.
There's somebody else involved, who is in turn somebody in opposition to whoever's behind Mr. Mind as well. So there are layers within layers within layers here that I'm really looking forward to eventually reading about in the trade.
Yeah. I mean, that's the first mention of that. I mean, the Lois Robot, we haven't gotten any mention of her being a threat to Lex. So if you're like, wow, you know, that came out of left field, well, it came out of left field for me too, actually.
Yeah, but then she got slagged, so,
Yes. Vandal Savage cleaved her in two.
Yeah. So that
I like to think that maybe there's like another one and like Lex is going to have like, you know, a backup because you know he's going to have a backup for everything. So I like to think that character's not gone yet.
Probably not. I mean, I would assume not. So.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Continued in this week's Secret. Next week, I believe it's our Secret Six.
Yep.
Yeah, to be concluded in Secret 629, and it looks like the building's going to blow up because somebody pressed the button. Who pressed the button? Was it Vandal?
Stump a rock.
Yeah, it just fell. It fell on something.
Yeah, it fell on a rock, yeah. But next issue is going to have the Joker in it of Action Comics, so that's why you guys need to read the next issue.
Yeah, I'll be rushing to grab that.
I'll get to that. I will, too. I will. But I'll wait till the collection. I'm still really annoyed that the first volume isn't out until the last week of March. What the hell is that? Seriously, DC, get your friggin' shit straight.
So, did you take the time to read the Jimmy Olsen backup just to kind of get an idea of it, or did you kind of skip over it?
You know what?
I'm going to, but I haven't yet. I have heard very good things about Jameel.
It's pretty good. I mean, I'm surprised at how good it is, and saddened that they're going to be taking it out of it. But it's pretty good. I don't think I read this one, but I've been reading the others. I think this one started. I don't know if it continued the previous stories, because like the previous stories, it was like an alien invasion, and it was really kooky because like they played up that Jimmy Olsen is basically like saving the universe, like, you know. People don't know it, but like Jimmy Olsen is like saving the universe from like evil genies and aliens and, you know, giant robots and stuff and the
It's Jimmy Olsen, Superman's pal for the present generation.
Yeah, but when he had like the aliens visit Earth because our oxygen makes them high, that was awesome. And he had to watch over the princess, and the princess kept hitting on him. That was pretty good. But yeah, I like it. It's good. It's Silver Age-ish. I like that about it. It's fun. We were just talking about fun in comics. Okay, but we'll move on from that.
It's the closeness and association to Superman. I can't. Sorry.
It's all right. I'll forgive you.
It's one.
But shoot. What else? What else came out last week? Green Lantern. You want to talk about Green Lantern,
or do
you
want to? Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll kind of. There's not too much more, I guess. So, why don't you go ahead, McFeely? What did you want to?
Oh God, I got too much stuff. Random selection here. What's good? S.H.I.E.L.D. came out. Was this last week? I don't even know, because the UK didn't get Marvel last week. So I didn't have anything to talk about last week anyway. So I've read everything this week, so I don't know what. But S.H.I.E.L.D. was out this week. Now, S.H.I.E.L.D. is another one of Hickman's books. I love S.H.I.E.L.D. But it is starting to get a bit of flack here and there, because the question is starting to be raised, how long do you give a plot? Well, no, how long do you give a comic before you really need it to start making sense? Because S.H.I.E.L.D. is only edging towards that.
How much time did Grant Morrison get? Years? So.
Well, this is true!
Yeah.
I mean, but then, you know, it's like, out of the gate, Batman and Son made sense internally, you know. It was his grand tapestry that took a long time to come together. Whereas, I would still be a little bit hard-pushed to actually tell you what S.H.I.E.L.D. is about. But this issue of S.H.I.E.L.D. is mainly about Nathaniel Richards and Howard Stark, who we've met in previous issues as agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., who were caught in an explosion with the Night Machine, the father of the main protagonist of this book, Leonid. And we rejoin them in this issue, discovering that the explosion has catapulted them several hundred thousand years into the future of Earth. So they're on some vast jungle, overgrown jungle planet. And scenes of them exploring their way around are intercut with scenes of them in the early part of the 50s joining up with S.H.I.E.L.D. and discussing what to do. And I think there are echoes of Hickman's Fantastic Four in here as well, because basically they have to tell their families that they won't be coming back. Not because they will die, but because they simply won't be allowed to. And Nathaniel finds that he can't do it. He doesn't tell them that he's going anywhere.
Yeah.
Whereas Howard Stark decides that he's just going to fake his death rather than have to go through that with his family. So these are two men who are completely avoid the issue for completely different reasons in completely different ways. And it's one of the more interesting scenes in the issue, because it is a nice self-contained character study instead of something that's mired in the high concept of the series. Like the other intercut scenes we get in this issue, which are three double page spreads, which span 57, 58, and 59, and 60, sorry, four double page spreads, which just cover the flow of time as the human machine, the device that Leonardo da Vinci brought forward in time earlier in the comic, begins to evolve, growing like an atom, like a particle from element through element. And the Star Child, the celestial baby whose birth he midwifed from the sun last issue, fucking awesome comic.
What the hell?
I know. as it begins to grow and learn, and the human machine begins to grow and become the elements of life. So it's about these two polar opposites, interrelated concept entities growing, while Da Vinci begins preaching a different methodology to Isaac Newton. And so S.H.I.E.L.D. begins to split in two, with one each side getting their own followers as these two things grow and mature over the course of the years. And as Nostradamus says, pay attention. Now things get interesting. And then the comic ends when we return to Nathaniel and Howard searching some ruins. I don't know if they're the ruins of Chronopolis or what, but there's a giant sphinx-like statue of Immortus, so that's how forward in the future we're talking here. And they find some kind of strange bird woman who leads them to the body of the Night Machine. And they tell him that they're looking for the Night Machine to use his tech to get them all back home, back to their proper times. But then the twist ending of the issue, going to spoil it right here and now, reveals that turns out the Night Machine, Leonid's father, is Nikola Tesla. And this issue is called The Forgotten Machines of Nikola Tesla.
When is that trade paperback coming out? Read this.
Wow.
This is issue 5, so I would assume that there will be at least one volume out after it hits 6 issues. But I'm only presuming that, frankly, because we know S.H.I.E.L.D. is finite in some sense, but not how finite it is. So, you know, if it's only going to be like 8 issues long or something, I was going to wait till the end to complete to publish the story arc.
I really hate that I missed getting that, but like my comic shop didn't get S.H.I.E.L.D. number 1 at all. I think they got like 2 copies of it, and I couldn't get it. And if they reprinted it, I missed it again. So I really want that trade to come out.
I mean, you were away from the mic there whenever I was just saying. I mean, some people are starting to say now, and it's a justified comment, which is, how long do you give a story before it starts making sense? And yeah. S.H.I.E.L.D. really hasn't quite got there yet. I will be fair. But there's just enough majesty in the high concepts that the comic keeps throwing at me and the pretty, pretty art to keep me coming back issue after issue. Particularly given the fact that it's bi-monthly signifies something big about it, but it's still only $3 to an issue. So I'm enjoying it for all of the brain-bendingness that's going on, you know. There's something vaguely Morrison-esque about it, but...
Yeah, that's what interests me, because it sounds like that, and I want to read it back.
Its ideas don't feel quite as refined. They don't feel quite as refined as Morrison, and the story itself doesn't stand apart from them too well, the way a well-sculpted Morrison story will. But I'm still really enjoying it, and I'm always eagerly look. There's always something that makes me go, "Oh damn!" Like, you know, we found out Isaac Newton was the fucking immortal mastermind behind S.H.I.E.L.D. and had Nostradamus chained up in his basement, or you know, stuff like that. There's always something really weird that happens in every issue.
You said Nathaniel Richards, you said Howard Stark, and you said Immortus all in the same issue. I want to read it.
Well, there you go. Then. I mean, I'm still not sure what to make of them running around in the 50s because, you know, I'm just not sure about the continuity or the chronology of the whole thing, you know, because they're not young men there in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how old does that make Tony Stark and Reed Richards? But I'm less concerned about that sort of thing. You just read it and get on with it, really.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else do I have? God, I got a load of Hickman. I got Secret Warriors and Ultimate Thor this week as well. I'm not going to talk at any length about them, but they continue to be good. Ultimate Thor continues to reveal more and more how it's a prologue to the Ultimates. It shows how Loki got trapped in the room without doors, and we still haven't found out how Thor wound up amnesiac. How Thor wound up in the scenario he was in at the start of the Ultimates, but I imagine that's issue 4. And mythologically, there's some interesting overlap with the Loki miniseries as well, just because it's dealing about Ragnarok and the death of Baldur. And Secret Warriors this week is a rather good one-shot issue. Quite a while back, before the book kicked into high gear, when Fury was divvying up the characters... and giving them their tasks, you know, basically they were told to go back to their quarters, they'd find an envelope that told them where and when they needed to be. And one character, Druid, the overweight, nervous magician, his note said, "Your reliability, go home, you're done." And we haven't seen him for like 7 months. But in this issue, this done in one issue, we found out that he went home and there waiting for him was one of Fury's men who told him, there is no out. And he's been training his ass like a mother for the last 7 months or however long, getting him training him in the use of his powers, and basically getting him to come in and save everybody from the cliffhanger at the end of the last issue. There's not much left to Secret Warriors now, too, so I hope that it's able to carry on this good momentum of good, strong story that it's been running on for the last couple of issues. Because, you know, it had slowed down, and it was a little bit at the start of this year, but it has gradually been picking steam back up. But I think just as the hammer gets close to falling out and the ending comes in sight, it's just getting better and better. So that's well worth a read as well. God, I also got Fantastic Four as well. I got to get off this Hickman.
Yeah. Apparently he's good.
Buying everything that dude is putting out right now. But we talked about this a little bit last week and we lost it as well. This issue is, for the most part, set up for the next issue. I mean, it's not really. It's just carrying on the story. But ultimately, at the climax of this issue, everybody is in a position where they can die next issue. Sue is still trying to broker the treaty between old Atlantis and new Atlantis, although it turns out that she's been pretty much caught in the middle of a scenario where she's inevitably going to die. Atlantean prophecy, never a pleasant thing. Reed has been taken off into the to the corner of the universe somewhere to explain to Galactus why there is the corpse of a dead Galactus from the future buried somewhere on Earth. And basically, he's been given the task to save everybody that's on New World. Because, this is Hickman playing the long game once again. Because Reed now believes that he can save everybody on New World, which he couldn't do it before. He couldn't... It goes back to Miller's run, in which the inhabitants of the dying Earth of the future were going to be teleported back in time by a team of characters who come back from the future, including an old invisible woman. To modern-day Earth. And they used the Galactus of the future to power their machine. And that killed him, and that's where that corpse came from. If you were wondering, if you didn't read Miller's run. But ultimately, in the same storyline, they also introduced the idea of a manufactured Earth that the big corporations of the planet had built to save the best of Earth whenever the planet eventually died. And so, the Fantastic Four shunted everybody from the future off to New Earth. And it was a happy ending. Until Jonathan Hickman came along and actually talked about how time passed faster on that Earth. Everything turned to hell, and now it's circling a black hole on the cusp of death as everybody in the world lives in deadly squalor. And Galactus is going to chow down on this planet. And so Reed has been given the challenge of saving everybody on it. But he now believes that he can, after the events of Solve Everything, Hickman's first story arc, in which all of the incredible things that all the Reeds from all across reality have done, there are supplies and provisions and places that can feed and house all of the people of this Earth. But Galactus is giving them... How long is he giving them?
Is it like a day?
Something like a day, you know. Yeah. Basically, he's giving them... You know, until he's ready to eat, until he's finished building his world-eating machine... He's giving them until that. So that's what Reed's doing. Reed is staring the jaws of death trying to save a planet from Galactus, while Ben and Johnny are defending the Baxter building against an incursion from Annihilus's negative zone city, Annihilus's anti-cult. Any one of them could die at this point. So, you know, besides recapping the plot, I don't have a world of things to say about the issue, because it does very much feel like a link in the chain. And also because I am disproportionately excited for the finale of this, despite decades of precedents telling me otherwise, and my own common sense, I should not be excited about the forthcoming, air quotes, death of a character. And yet, oh my God, bring it on.
You know, it's strange, you know, because we shouldn't care about stuff like that, but it's just morbid curiosity, I guess, is what gets the best of
it. I couldn't even call it morbid curiosity. I mean, I just think he's really going to do it right. Whatever happens, I just think it's going to come off right. And I fully expect the character to be back in a year.
And let's also say who we think it is, because I think we lost that from
last episode.
Human Torch, we all said we think it's going to be him.
Well, I just – the smart – all the intelligence speculation seems to be favoring him. I don't really have an opinion one way or the other, because I could see it being any of them. Johnny is just the one who hasn't died before, but he has done so little in Hickman's run overall that I would be surprised if he died. You know?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Johnny, just for the issue where it goes back and Franklin said that, you know, you're my hero or something. You know,
his favorite hero is still the Human Torch.
It's still the Human Torch, yeah.
Gives me the impression that there's something there that he did that was worthy of that admiration. And I think, too, I mean, if you look at the teaser image, and we're pretty sure it's not going to be Sue, based on the teaser image for 3, you know, for the series coming up after 3.
The issue after the death, issue is being promoted as the final issue of Fantastic Four. And the next month it's going to be FF number 1 is going to get released. And that's got these 3 interlocking hexagons on the cover, and one of the hexagons is transparent. So we're just assuming off of that Sue will live.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't... Yeah, despite I had a Twitter discussion with Newsarama, whoever runs their Twitter, a couple weeks ago, and you know they seemed to be pretty adamant that it was going to be Reed, but I just don't see him doing that.
I could see why anybody would think that, because Reed has been absolutely at the core of everything that has happened in Hickman's Fantastic Four, but it seems almost too obvious.
Yeah. And I think it would. I think that's the breaking element. I mean, that's the whole thing, is that he's the core. What's Hickman gonna do based on everything that's come before if Reed isn't there?
So much more story potential if they kill Johnny, because then we see how that affects everybody else, because it's gonna feed into their stories.
Well, Cassius has just said in the chat, if Johnny hasn't done much, that might make him expendable. But that doesn't feel like the attitude that's being taken towards this. It's not like he's offing somebody because he's deliberately kept him off the field because of that. There will be ramifications to this. I fully expect FF to last about 12 issues, and then we'll have Fantastic Four 600 in about a year's time, and whoever's dead will come back.
Yeah. I mean that.
And even though I know this, or at least have this mapped out in my head, you know, I'm still wetting myself in anticipation for this comic.
I'm excited. I think for comic lovers, I think it's a good event. I don't think this is not one of those things where it's like Death of Superman or you know, Death of Batman or something, which I think is, I mean, not that those weren't interesting-ish stories, but I think those are things, you know, even like this upcoming Death of Spider-Man and Ultimate, I think these are things that are sort of media-hypey kind of stuff that is going to get press. But I don't think this is going to get a lot of press, but I think within the comic book appreciation, you know, within the community, I think that this is a bigger deal for us.
Yeah, I just can't see this being a big headline grabber unless it's a really quiet news week, you know. It will remain to be seen. Yeah, much like, you know, the sellout of Superman Earth 1 was caused by it being a really quiet news week and a lot of American newspapers covering the release of the book. But I really don't want it to be covered in all over newspapers, because if they're actually polybagging the damn comic to prevent spoilers, I would hope they would have the decency to not release the information to papers.
Right.
Yeah. It's going to be blackout that day for me, not anything.
I'm going to have to, like, keep my head down, not read Twitter, not read, you know, not read Twitter, not read comic, you know, not read any of the news or anything, just to try to...
Knowing my luck, I'll be playing Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions, and there will be an update, and it'll say, hey... Johnny died in Fantastic Four or something in the update.
No. I'm rarely that bothered about trying to avoid... I mean, I usually try to avoid spoilers, you know, but I don't usually get too worked up about it. But I really, really don't want to be spoiled on this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose the more I say that on the air here, the more likely some bastard is going to drop me a line.
Now, our listeners, if you want another
Fantastic Four this week, go and check out the What If issue 200 that came out last week, I think. The 200th issue of What If you add up all the individual series and one-shots and things. The lead story is a fairly uninteresting What If Norman Osborn Had Won Siege by Mark Guggenheim, with some really nice art. No, I do have to say, some really nice, like, painterly artwork. Ooh, I've just kicked something. That was a toothbrush. But the draw, as far as I was concerned, was the second story in the issue, which is What If the Watcher Had Killed Galactus by Stan Lee.
Huh.
With art by Dale Eaglesham, who was Hickman's first partner on Fantastic Four. And it is very 1960s Fantastic Four. Just breakneck jumping from thing to thing. You don't even see the Watcher fire the shot that kills Galactus in the comic. But a wonderful little twist in the ending that I didn't see coming. And there's a retrospective article in the history of What If with Roy Thomas in there. A bunch of creators weigh in on their favorite What Ifs. And the favorite What If of the issue's editor, Ed Brubaker, and Captain America, What If Elektra Had Lived, is reprinted in its entirety in this issue as well.
And then written by Frank Miller, too, wasn't it?
Yep, by Frank Miller, which was, I think, one of the points they make is, like, it's one of the first What Ifs to actually be drawn by the creator of the story that the What If was actually being asked about.
Right.
And that was the draw of it. And there's a checklist of all the What Ifs in the back. So there's a lot of content, and there's a 5-book comic, and as I say, the lead strip is very, very nice to look at. But it's basically, what if Ares had cottoned on to the fact Norman Osborn was lying earlier and had attempted to kill Norman? As he promised he would cut Norman's head off if he found out Norman was lying, and he basically twigged to Norman's lies earlier. But then the sentry came in and killed Ares there and then, so he was all nice and rested up for the final battle and kicked everybody's ass, and Norman won siege. And, yeah, basically the answer is shit got worse. it's one of those grim what ifs where basically everybody dies. And that's
what ifs are grim anyway. I mean, there's always bad stuff happening a lot of the times. The ones that stick out in my mind, like, I don't know if this one's a particularly good one, but kind of sticks out in my mind. Like, what if Wolverine killed the Hulk? You ever read that one?
I haven't read that one, no.
Yeah, I mean, basically, he joins the X-Men and everybody dies.
You know? I just remember that, I remember What If Civil War had two stories in it, and one was like, what if, I think the question might have even been the same either way, and basically there was one grim one where everybody died and registration was the doom of the world. And then there was one story where they all, Tony and Steve, set their differences aside, teamed up, and everything turned out nice for everybody. I guess that doesn't make for a particularly dramatic storytelling, but it's just nice whenever it works out well for everybody sometimes.
You know the best what-if story? What if Spider-Girl existed? Because it spawned...
Yes, well, that was definitely one of the most big what-ifs.
I'm sorry, I had to mention that.
No, you're quite right. I mean, a friggin' ongoing series out of it. JD stepped away from the mic for a moment, so what else do I have to fill for time until he comes back? Children's Crusade was also at some time in the last 2 weeks. And thankfully something, I mean, you know, I have enjoyed this series. I have. But I've said in previous installments, not a hell of a lot has been happening in it since the first issue. It's just been a lot of people standing around and talking really grumpily about how they should maybe do something. And they finally get to doing something in this issue, so that's good. And they found the Scarlet Witch, who is in the... It basically turns out that, despite what everybody was thinking, Dr. Doom hasn't been holding the Scarlet Witch at all. Somehow, in some way, for some reason, she actively sought him out.
Hmm.
And now they are engaged to be married.
Hmm.
And we get a pocketed history of the Scarlet Witch and her craziness and the Young Avengers before, unfortunately, all the other Avengers turn up and Wolverine gets really kill-happy.
So is the Scarlet Witch still crazy? I mean, because I have no idea what they've done with her.
She's acting quite sane, but she doesn't remember who she is. And then there's a rather surprise last page return I believe this came out this week, so I won't blow the last page return, because it's basically on the second to last page, there's a speech balloon of particular shape and color going, "Not if I can help it." And I was like, what is that blue and red? Wait a minute, is that? And then I turned the page and I was like, oh damn, it actually is. Wait, what the hell? So there was a bit of a what the hell finale to this one, which has my interest peaked, definitely. And this remains, also this remains a very important point, a gorgeous book to actually look at. And it is more than people standing around a table or a field or a tower discussing what they should maybe be doing. And Dr. Doom is in it.
You can't go wrong with that.
No. Doom, all things are better with Doom. Thrust in Doom.
Doom and salt. It's sort of the salt. Doom. No? Okay.
Doom.
Yeah. Doom.
Just Doom.
What about you, JD? What do you got?
Okay. So, let's see. I got three right here that I wanted to talk about. One is going to be Green Lantern 61, which really should be called Red Lantern sub-issue, because most of this is Red Lantern stuff.
Oh, wait. I don't mean to interrupt you, but we didn't mention that there's going to be a Red Lantern comic series, did we?
There is.
I totally forgot about that. I heard about that. They're going to – I mean, you guys haven't heard that? Later on, they're coming out with a Red Lantern comic series?
I had heard some sort of rumble about it.
Yes.
It was actually happening or not.
But I don't know. Just thought I'd mention while it was on my mind, you know, before I forgot again. But yeah, there's a Red Lantern comic series possibly coming out with
nice
with this guy in it.
So this issue is interesting. I mean, like I said, the larger focus is here is on Atrocitus.
Yeah, I'm just seeing it here announced that the Red Lantern Corps will receive an ongoing series written by Peter Milligan.
Yeah.
Don't know what I think about that.
It does have Dexstar in it though. Which sounds awesome.
Well, you can't go wrong with that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So, go ahead, JD. Continue.
No, so issue starts out, I don't know, there's two people in a truck? I'm not sure where they're coming from.
It's rather irrelevant.
It doesn't
dead.
Really matter, other than somebody was sort of violent, so Atrocitus sort of killed them, and then used their
just sort of
blood. Not completely. Actually, he did. But sort of destroys their truck and kills them and uses their blood to sort of channel and figure out, because they've been, him and Sinestro had been hunting the Butcher, which is the Red Lantern entity, and he tracks it to the execution of a convict. And so, and then it cuts, of course, to this execution, and it cuts to the Butcher, you know, coming in and to try to find a host. What I love was this sort of switcheroo, and I think it's an interesting insight into the Rage entity. And again, some of what's been happening both here in Green Lantern and then also in Brightest Day is to sort of adjust or flip around what we may think of the entities, because we've really up until this point only been exposed to two, and it hadn't been, I don't think, very clear how they functioned or worked. And so you expect, my expectation, I think most readers' expectation would be, that he was coming to get the convict guy, but it's not. It's the victim's father that he ends up possessing because of all of the rage that he's feeling at the death of his daughter at the hands of this murderer or whatever. And basically a large scene ensues, the Spectre shows up, and him and the Butcher go at it. Apparently they have quite a history.
It's logical.
Which it does. They sort of overlap. So they get into it a bit. But the Butcher does end up possessing the guy, which, oh man, does he look badass. I think that's my favorite looking entity so far.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
I mean, the art really makes it, but wow. Just it's second only to the Predator, but, or no, not second. This is first, and Predator would be second, but wow. And a huge horn, sort of, you know, bony appendage, and just all sort of assortment of blades, including a huge two-handed sort of axe with the Red Lantern symbol built in. Just a vicious-looking costume. Takes the two-handed axe into the Spectre's face. I mean, this is... there's a lot of conversation, though, going back and forth about the possession of the entity, Atrocitus's place and everything. You know, him trying to execute, you know, basically take out Vengeance and Atrocitus trying to stop. You get... I think this is a larger insight into Atrocitus. I think that's one of those characters where early on in this run, especially from Blackest Night, this character had the potential to be very two-dimensional. Oh, he's just Blind Rage. And this issue really opens that up.
This issue opens up the entire concept of Rage. Because this is, like, basically, this is the first possessed dude that you're really actually rooting for.
Yeah,
in a funny way, because I mean, this is one of the two like emotions or elements or whatever that are the two extremes of the spectrum, like the most uncontrollable and wild emotions, and you know, really, apart from Adara, the Hope entity, none of the other entities have been presented as being good. Yeah, Ion would be another one.
Yeah,
but you know, everybody else that's been possessed has run around doing bad things, and so has this guy. But it's, you want to root for him because he's trying to avenge his daughter, and I just think it's a really, really nice twist on, as you say, something that's been pretty two-dimensional. I mean, we've seen hints of things going on with Atrocitus. We're getting the bigger picture now, and just showing that, you know, sometimes rage is all that you have left.
Right.
And it's all you can just immerse yourself in the end. And that's not a good thing, but you can see why these characters like Atrocitus and this poor guy that gets possessed, you can't condemn them entirely. And I'm really quite impressed that they've decided to go that route with this.
Yeah,
given the way they've treated the other things.
Yeah, and you see, I mean, even at the end of all of this, I mean, you know, and of course the guy ends up offing the convict and the butcher, as he's possessed by the butcher. And at the end, you know, Spectre tries to judge him, and Atrocitus basically stops him. But he doesn't. What's interesting is that he doesn't stop him physically. He has, you know, he makes an argument. He actually makes a sort of logical argument with the Spectre, and basically gets the Spectre to agree that he shouldn't be judged. Which I thought is brilliant. I mean, it's so easy to default
that is tough to...
Yes. Well, I mean, first of all, it's easy to default to the physical fight, where they say, okay, the Spectre would just be beaten by Atrocitus. I mean, we could believe that Atrocitus was that strong. But to have the character actually talk him down and make a reasonable argument to say, no, you know, your concept is an eye for an eye, and yet that's not true, because obviously one person would have value over another. You know, his rage is justified versus the murderer. You know, so you're saying that these two people are equal when obviously they aren't. And then I think the Spectre even starts to try to judge Atrocitus and stops. I think he says that he can't be judged because his mission against Krona is a holy one. So larger implications there as well. For this being a Green Lantern issue, where not a single Green Lantern appears, I really liked this issue.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I think it. Not that I wasn't interested in Atrocitus before, but man, I mean, I really want to see more. And like I said, now that we know that there's going to be a series coming up, I'll be very interested to see where that goes as well. So
I like how it ends also where it says I hate them, and then it says most of them, you know, and it shows the dude that got turned into the butcher.
Yeah, because he, you know, he identifies with that guy. Yeah.
He knows rage.
Yeah,
it's so interesting. I mean, definitely some of these guys like Larfleeze and Atrocitus have definitely seemed like they could be very one-dimensional, And just recently they have started to play with the ideas behind, because there are reasons. I mean, you know, this thing about Hal Jordan is like, oh, he's really willful. Yeah, that's fascinating. Not so much, but there are reasons why characters who are victim to these harmful emotions are the way they are, and you know they really are exploring these stories. I mean, also, like, it's a good thing. This was a good issue because the fact that it doesn't follow up on last month's cliffhanger at all is a real tease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what was last month's cliffhanger? I don't even
Corona.
Yeah.
Well, the only mention again is that his mission against Corona is holy, but that's the only mention of it. I mean, it really kind of leaves that hanging out there for a whole nother month of, you know, waiting for that.
It's kind of weird, you know?
Mm. So, anyway, good stuff out of that. Something amazing happened. I bought the next issue of Osborn.
Yay!
Hi.
Hooray!
And, wow, I was not disappointed. This continued to be good stuff. I mean, the beginning of this issue is Osborn having an entire conversation with the priest, and he's talking about ethical processes of the hyena and how he makes an interesting argument to basically say that, you know, perspective is reality, so to speak, and those, you know, who may say that a hyena is a scavenger in evil don't understand opportunity and advancement, you know, through alternate means and how that actually helps in development. But I don't know, it was really interesting. I'm really digging the art in this, actually.
Yeah, this is barely recognizable as the Emma Rios that I have seen, admittedly only a little of, but I've seen her on the Strange miniseries by Mark Waid last year. And she did a little bit of Runaways as well, and she has come a long way in a very short period of time. Really, really digging what she's doing on this book.
Mm-hmm. But pretty much what I think, I mean, it's not that it went in a completely unexpected direction. Of course, the priest has helped Osborn as well as the other high-risk inmates, I guess, at this facility escape. You actually see them kill a guard, which was...
Oh, man, that is the most insane set of pages. That is awesome.
Yeah.
Just like an alarm starts blaring and the red hazard lights come on, you know? And, there's the alarm now. And, and like, progressively, everything's done, like, at a diagonal angle. And as you sweep across the page, like, the diagonal starts to get more and more curved, and everything starts to just turn into this insane whirl, and you can really you're really sucked into this scene as the guard starts to, you know, the alarm is driving the guard nuts, so he's clutching his head to his ears, and he's really having to bellow. And then in the midst of all that, he's being, you know, annoyed by the inmates bickering back and forth with each other and saying, well, you know, you just really, really find yourself getting pulled into the sheer insanity of the scene. It's a real whirlpool of art and dialogue and events that is like one of the best just like convergences of art and dialogue and intent I've seen outside of J.H. Williams. This is really good. Mm-hmm. And then it's like a sudden, you just turn the page and the lights are off and the shouting stuff. There's a sudden cold slam into the real horrifying situation that he's allowed himself to fall. That is a fantastic set of pages.
Yeah. And well, and especially like the denouement of that just entire bit where,
oh god, yeah, it's
the girl, the, I can't remember her name, the blonde, but she
yeah, I forgot.
You know, she basically tells him, you know, hey, you know, if you you know, get them to open up the cells, then, you know, maybe you might make it out. Probably not, but, you know, it's your only shot. And so he does. He tries to raise the guy on the radio and tell him to open them, and the guy on the other side says, hey, you know, I can't do that. So, squish.
Unpleasant.
Oh, wow.
What a fantastic scene, like a truly bleak. I just really that double page spread of red insanity, mm-hmm, is truly fantastic. I haven't seen something like that in a comic for a while now. Just the way that you really you can hear it in your mind. You know, you can hear the alarm. You can hear the characters bellowing over the top of one another as he's losing his patience, and they're staying icy calm around him. And then the sudden cold slam back into reality on the following page. That is some great work. Yeah. Just on an artistic and on a writing level. Absolutely great.
Yeah. But, you know, in the rest of this comic, of course, Osborne actually...
Yeah, there's other good thing. Osborne's in it, too.
You know, Osborne's in it, too. But I love this Osborne bit, because originally the priest shows up, and he's like, oh, we're going to break you out. And Osborne's like, I really want to stay. He said, I think, you know, his point seemed to be that if he stayed... He would find a way to get out legitimately, and that would actually be more effective than escaping. So, but that
the deal,
and that doesn't end up being an option because things were already in motion. You know, and you forget things that, you know, Osborne is actually really strong, and he like totally rips one.
Yeah,
guy
you
apart.
Really do. You know, I was like, well, how is he doing? Oh yeah, wait, Green Goblin.
Yeah, he's Green Goblin. Yeah, exactly. And that was like, you know, and that I think used that very effectively because up to this point he has spent so much time actually, you know, using his wit that you forget that he is,
yeah,
you know,
years just doing that. Really,
he don't need no Iron Man suit.
No, he really did. I mean, that was all for effect and show. But yeah, I mean, so you know, he ends up recruiting the other prisoners to help him get out as well as them, and basically. Even offs like the least helpful of them, in the midst of this. I think one as a show of power, and two just because the guy wasn't going to be very helpful. Which,
well, it's not even, he doesn't even do anything. He just allows them to kill themselves, sort of. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he just didn't help them. So.
I don't know. Though that thing looks pretty amphibious. So. Maybe it's not deaf. We'll see.
Yeah.
So the verdict is I should be reading this book.
Oh, you should be reading this. This is really good.
I was the only Spider-Man reader, definitely, yeah.
The only thing I was kind of...
trade paperback is when I should read it, because I've not read a single issue of it yet.
Well, you're only missing one issue. So, I mean, you could go get the other one and read both of these and be good.
You should be able to pick two up, I would say. It's only just out, and you maybe back order number one. Okay. I would definitely say into it now, yeah.
So the only thing I was kind of disappointed by is in the first issue we had talked about that amazing sort of backup that gave you the backstory for that one character, and that was missing from this issue.
Yeah, well, the letters page says we're not going to get any more backups about the other inmates. And that's a bit of a disappointment because that was awesome.
It was so good. I mean, that was like a big point.
I don't know, though. I think it's possible this issue may benefit from not having it, because frankly, if you're going to put Warren Ellis on a backup strip and just allow him to completely over your shadow, you're fairly thoughtful and set-up-y first issue, you know, it may be to the book's advantage to maybe drop your excellent Warren Ellis backups whenever you really want to get your main story rolling, because this was great, and then it didn't have anything to overshadow it from a more known creator in the back. That said, I do miss the backup.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, the story was so good, though. I mean, it doesn't, like, need it. I just would have liked to have had it, but I think it's a testament, again, to how, one, how good the writing is in this, and two, how excellent the art is that it's still being carried without that little bit. It's just a little, you know, that was just like a little side item that I really liked out of the first one. I mean, it was so creepy. I was even telling my wife about it. We went and saw Black Swan. If you haven't seen that, it's an excellent movie. But there was like a linking element because you got to see that insight into that sort of insanity, and that's what I really liked. But hey, it's okay. So I'm not going to cry over it. I'm going to keep reading this mini, which... Yes, I know. When it was announced at the end of Siege, that I was like, nobody wants to read Osborn. Okay, this is good. I'm sorry. I was wrong.
I mean,
when am I ever right?
I bought it off of just purely who the writer was, Kelly Sue DeConnick. I couldn't tell you anything about her other than the fact that she's Matt Fraction's other half. I read her short with the Avengers handlers, Sharon Carter, Maria Hand, no, Maria, what's her name? Ross Hill. Maria Hill. Maria Hill and Victoria Hand in one of the Age of Heroes anthology issues. Really enjoyed it, thought it was quite funny and told a nice, concise, action-packed story in a couple of pages. And I purely decided I'd give it a look off of the back of that. I mean, you know, I mean, you're quite right. I think a lot of people were saying, I mean, do we really need another, an Osborn miniseries so soon after he's been in the... I mean, there was definitely always going to be story potential in what happens to Osborn next. But this is so far beyond what you might have expected you would have been getting from what could have been a very throwaway miniseries has turned into a great... artist and writer team, and I would really like to see these guys do something together in the future, you know, especially, you know, if they can continue to evolve in the short time that they have been prominent to the extent that they have already. I mean, I don't know if DeConnick has done anything for Marvel prior to Little Bits and Girl Comics and Age of Heroes, but if Emma Rios can keep evolving the way she has from Strange over the course of just a year until now, if we can get wonderful fusions of art and script the way that happens just like smack in the middle of that issue. Yes, more, please. Osborn, good.
Excellent. Okay, and my last one from last week, and then I think we'll go straight into the capper, or do we have any others?
What do you got now?
How can we not talk about Flash, the Reverse Flash Rebirth?
Well, we did talk about that last week, but we've lost
it. We loved on it so much last week that it broke the podcast. And
it broke
that,
it.
That must have, that
we've
must have been
what
it was.
A while here. Maybe we should just make this one the capper.
Do we want to? I mean, yeah, I guess Brightest Day wasn't that exciting.
Yeah, Brightest Day.
I mean, it had some good stuff. I mean, there's a big fight there between, you know, love entities and
now, I do like how the stories are coming together a little bit more. Yeah. Because, yes. Like, everybody showed up in this issue, it seemed like, except for, I think, Aquaman. Aquaman, I don't think, was in it.
Well, and Martian Manhunter was in it. It was three. It was Firestorm, Boston, and then the Hawk.
So, it wasn't bad. It's not the best issue.
No.
Boston got himself a little nasty.
He got some nasty. He got a hamburger afterwards, and he went and saw his grandpa. Come on.
Yeah. Oh, I really liked the bit with his granddad.
The grandpa part was really good. So, but anyway... I think, okay, that pretty much covers it.
Yeah, that's
pretty
much.
New entity, new possessed entity of love, which is...
Oh, and what's going on with at the end with the White Lantern ring now charging up?
Yes, that's the big question.
That's the big question.
Deadpool finally did something nice. Deadpool got a little nasty, and the ring started to... Deadpool? Dead man. Ring charging up.
So Dead Man, is Dead Man the guy? He's just got to learn that he is the White Lantern. Is that what it is?
Maybe. Could be.
That's what I'm getting from this.
It may be that he has to learn, you know, they've just told him that he has to find the champion and to get on with his life. Getting on with his life, it will be all it needs.
Yep. That's all he needs. I think that's what we're getting from this last page. That's what makes me like
it. There you go.
Yeah.
That was our quick, fast review of Brightest Day 17 and pretty much the only thing that came out.
Oh, and Firestorm didn't destroy the universe. We need to mention that. Also.
Now he's in the antimatter universe. So
yeah,
which that's a good question. Can he convert antimatter? Because that he didn't sense any matter around.
Yeah, well, that's why he wouldn't have sensed any matter.
Yeah, because there's no matter. It's all antimatter. Anyway, that's going to be interesting. So let's talk about the stuff that was really, really good here. The one thing that I think we were really excited about last week, and we talked about at length, that we're going to talk about at length again, which I'm actually kind of excited about, which is Flash, which actually was the Reverse Flash Rebirth.
Dun-dun-dun.
Dun-dun.
By the 2010 Spike TV Scream Award winner, Jeff Johns.
Jeff Johns.
Says it on the cover.
The amazing Jeff Johns. So let's talk a little bit about what we know about Reverse Flash up to this point. We know he's from the 25th century. The character had died at one point.
Barry Allen broke his neck.
Barry Allen killed him, broke
his
neck.
He's been dead a long time.
Long time. And then he came back inexplicably, and then in Flash Rebirth, and then was captured. Then during the events of Blackest Night, had the... zombie version of himself raised, and then at the end of Blackest Night was resurrected, but not that version of him, the captured version, is my
No. It was the dead version of Professor Zoom came back to life and then proceeded to travel back in time and go and do Flash Rebirth.
Go and do Flash Rebirth. Okay.
There you go.
And then up until this point, Captain
Boomerang... Last issue, yeah. He was locked in Iron Heights until last issue.
Yeah.
And
read this issue before this issue. That's what we need.
Right. So basically, but that's a recap for you, for those that hadn't been following for this.
You just read them. You read Flash Rebirth, Blackest Night, and then these issues.
Yes. Yeah. So we start out with basically right where it left off, with him escaping, and he's saying that he is free and now free to change it all, and that he's always been interested in the idea of probability. And you see a mirror shot of what appears to be the creation of the Barry Allen Flash and then the creation of the Reverse Flash, Professor Zoom, Thawne, side by side. The rest of the comic is absolutely fascinating to me as far as the structure, because what Johns does as far as telling the story is starts at the beginning, starts, you know, it kind of explains that life in the 25th century is all about time and efficiency, and that, you know, it's very important that you allocate your time properly, and everything's measured down to the second, and how much time you spend doing things. And so in the first little bit of the story here, he talks about himself, and that he was basically designed, you know, according to what his parents wanted for him, and that he was, you know, had blonde hair and blue eyes and 167 IQ, and, you know, that his name was Ibbard Thawne, and that his parents decided that he needed to have a brother. And, of course, because of the events of having a brother, he had to spend time with the brother, because that was part of the reason that they decided that he needed a brother, was for socialization. But that meant that he fell behind on his studies, and that meant that he didn't get as far ahead in school, and then didn't get the job that he wanted, and ended up sort of second best to his semi-bullying authority figure younger brother. And then Reverse Flash shows up and erases his brother from history. And you see this sort of inverted panel or reverse panel as it leads through, showing the events of the brother showing up and then him taking care of his young brother and then the baby. And then he says his name again and says that he was an only child.
Yeah, like even the thought, the bubbles are reversed, the words are reversed, yeah, and everything. Fading away. Yeah. And then it starts again with saying, "My name is Ibbard Thawne, and I was an only child now."
Brilliant.
We just follow him through his life, and every time something goes wrong, red lightning crackles in the corner, time goes back, and whatever was wrong gets changed. And I love the artistic evolution of it, because the first time it happens, you get full-on Reverse Flash, there he is, grabs the brother, panels play backwards. Yeah. And the next time it happens, you just see him come in from off-panel. It's one faded panel. Until, by the end of it, all you need to know that is happening, is just this red bolt of lightning cracks across the comic, and things change.
And, I mean, it goes so, I mean, and it, really at every single point. I mean, again, you know, like the next point is that he gets a better placement in the university, but then he doesn't, you know, get as far, like his parents get in the way, and then they go away, and it just, it's amazing.
But they don't get erased, though. We should mention that.
No, he kills them all.
He kills them.
He just has them killed.
Because if he erased them, he wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
So he can't do that. But you see... you see him molding his own future towards the destiny that he had. So it's...
but this is what I find the most fascinating about this comic. And I was... you know, people who have read this have come back into the shop with me to talk about this, because it is so interesting as a comic. And we're all debating whether or not... is this his life as he remembers living it? Or... is he desperately in vain trying to fix the life that he lived that turned out badly? I mean, was the Reverse Flash from the future already tinkering in his timeline? And the Reverse Flash, as he is now, remembers his life as the finalized form after all the tinkering with no brother and the top position and the dead parents and the failed romance? Or does he remember the earliest version of it where the brother got in the way and he didn't manage to do any of those things and he's tried and failed to set his life right? I mean, is this the tragic story of somebody who is trying to set their life right? Or is this the really twisted story of somebody who is just merely molding their life into the form that he knows it has to take?
That's what I think it is. I think it happened. I think that he knew it had to happen. And I think when he got loose, he knew that now I have to go back and make it happen. Because if it doesn't happen, then what? You have like a crazy paradox or some time thing that'll happen?
Yeah, and I mean, I think it can be even simpler than that. I mean, in the sense that it's those things that Doctor Who does this occasionally, where you'll see an episode where he's doing things that obviously his future self has gone back and put in place for himself. And I get the sense that that's sort of what's happened here, that he's always ended up that way, but he had to go back to adjust those things to be the way that they were. But there's something else here. And again, there's the mention again of like the reverse Speed Force and how it possibly differs, but we don't really have a full exploration yet or concept of how it differs from the Speed Force itself. I mean, all we know is that that's where his powers are coming from.
Well, we get the Flash facts or the Reverse Flash facts back up in this, which just says basically it's got more powers than we're aware of, and that perhaps even more than Thawne is aware of. And we'll see how it goes. He can't destroy Barry at birth, because without Barry, the Speed Force will never exist, and without the Speed Force, the Reverse Speed Force won't exist.
Yeah, that those two offset each other.
But he will do everything else he can to Barry's life to destroy it, short of
That's awesome, because you know we know he can. He can go back and he can make it so he was never born, but that's the one thing he can't do, but anything else he does, he can't. You can't stop him. Yeah. You know,
it prompts it to be even more twisted, because this is a twisted comic.
Like, I think it's safe to say that this might be my favorite issue of the new Flash.
Yeah, and you know, I agree, but at the same time, I don't want that to diminish the softer first six issues that we have.
Oh yeah, they were great too. I mean, there hasn't really been a bad issue of Flash. No. I'm talking very highly because it's been a great series. This has probably been my favorite thing to come out. I mean, it is my favorite thing to come out of Blackest Night, honestly.
I mean, I mean, it's the only really good, really, really good thing to come out of Blackest Night. I mean, whoopee, we've had a new Green Arrow series and a Birds of Prey series that failed to access new readers as far as I can make out. And what else? Did we get any other new series?
Not really, I don't think.
Okay, so, you know, this is where it's at. I mean, obviously, you know, speed-based puns are rather unavoidable when we talk about the delays this thing has had. And all of these books they've talked about doing, companion books like Speed Force or a new Kid Flash book, have just completely failed to materialize thus far. But we're on the road to Flashpoint now, which looks to be DC's big event for next year. It looks like it's going to be more than just some kind of Flash event at this point. It looks like it is going to be DC's big crossover event for next year. And frankly, you know, if these last two issues have been any indication, yes, please.
Yeah. You notice that this is not carrying the Brightest Day tag.
Yeah, it's not either, is it? Yeah.
I just noticed that, but...
But have we got to a point...
Have they dropped it?
They just dropped that off books at this point, or what?
Last issue have it?
I mean, the Green Lantern issue from the same week still has it. I mean, it's smaller, but...
Yeah, well...
Because, you know, last issue is Captain Boomerang, so it kind of makes sense that it'd have it, but it would also kind of make sense for this issue to have it, too. But,
I mean, this is one of those comics, I wouldn't say that it has, like, a big reveal. I mean, we're not, you know, it's... Which has been the standard, but it's really...
It's just recapping the history of a character that, frankly... many modern readers will have never had any exposure to. In much the same way as they would have very little exposure to Barry, except as some kind of sanctified figure of the past.
Yeah, because I'm not Reverse sure Flash, when
Professor Zoom died. But it's got to be sometime before 1985.
My understanding is he died right before the events of Infinite Crisis.
Crisis on Infinite Earth.
Crisis on Infinite Earth. Correct. So
I believe Barry killed him and then retired to the future, which was shortly before Crisis on Infinite Earth. So yeah, you know, that's over 25, nearly 30 years ago.
Yeah, long time. But
this is definitely a story that needs to be told, you know.
But I think
a wonderful twist on the story.
And the thing that I like about this issue is this is one of those issues that you can read a couple of times. It's the pleasure in it is really in the reading and the structure and the design of the story itself. It's not one of those that has the big reveal at the end, but on the other hand, it's just really interesting to read and sort of dissect and parse out, which is rare, but I love it. So
it is it is possibly the best just single standalone issue of the year possible. You know, it's hard to parse out issues when it comes to big story arcs, but as a simple start, middle and end contained in one comic, which remains part of the bigger thing. I mean, the only other comic that I can think that's really been doing that has been Hickman's Fantastic Four, and even then, only really in the Four Cities story arc. But I gotta say, like, I think just as a single issue, that could be the best single issue of the year, just as a single issue story.
Yeah.
So I guess it's safe to say that Geoff Johns, he's not out of juice yet.
No.
That's the thing? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you would allow him to be, you know, if Geoff Johns turned in a couple of shitty comics after Brightest Day and being promoted to Chief Creative Officer, you'd be like, well, fair enough, Geoff. You know, you've been working hard the last.
I mean, he already had one successful run on Flash. Now he's got another one.
You know, you wouldn't blame him for phoning a couple in, you know.
Well, I'll pay you a few duff ones, Geoff, if you want to go and have a Slurpee and some Frankenberry or whatever it is you like to eat, according to your Twitter. You know, but no, he just keeps throwing the quality out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe awesome. Those people at Spike TV actually know what they're talking about.
They might.
So.
A couple of years, the Scream Awards will be the
Academy. I'm telling you, they might be on to something. You know, people look back and like, wow, Scream Awards are really progressive. They really had that Geoff Johns guy pegged. I think he's got a bright future ahead of him. So, all right. Well, hey. We had a show that is, like, going to be broadcasted.
Is it, though? Everything's okay, right?
I have double...
Everybody's still alive out there in chat? Type something to let us know you can hear us.
They could hear us the whole time. I've got double redundancy. This episode is going up. It is going to happen.
Hooray!
So, but
happy
hey...
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year, everybody.
Merry Christmas, too. We didn't do one then either.
No, didn't do Christmas, didn't do New Year. So, but we're back. We're in action. We've got big stuff coming out. We'll have our one-year episode coming up.
We're nearly one.
So that I may try and actually get some people and actually do some better planning and get some people to come back and join us for that 1 year. And
man, I really hope we can get Geoff Johns for the 1 year episode like we did last week.
Yes, man, I know. We gotta see if we can get him back. You know, it was really so a couple of things to mention. One, Brian and I are now doing a weight loss podcast. It is called Get the Skinny. You can go to the website, which is gettheskinny.org, which is actually just really a subset of the tfradio.net. But it is there, and we're tracking our weight. We're talking about good weight loss science. It's a lot of fun. I've actually had a great time because I've been talking to like my coworkers about it and kind of getting them interested in trying to be a little bit healthier and stuff. So check that out. We should have a new episode coming out shortly, or we're going to do one shortly anyway. So we got that. Two, do want to mention again, we are now affiliated with Comic News International. So like when we actually do an episode like today, they're posting it up there for us. So again, you can always go to Comic News International. That's comicnewsi.com and get the latest news, see what issues are coming out. Really good resource, so definitely check them out. And if you link off of that as well, there's all kinds of other entertainment news. It's all part of ENI, which, you know, T-Formers and everything is all part of that. So, again, we want to thank those guys and thank them for supporting us, supporting what we're trying to do here. And we want to thank you as well. We really appreciate you joining us in 2010, making 2010 a great start for the show. And
bearing with us.
Yes, yeah. Bearing with us through all the adversity of the last few weeks of technical difficulties and other things and shuffling of people and all of that fun stuff. But we got all that worked out, and I'm really excited about where we're at and where we're going and what we're going to be doing. And, again, we really appreciate all of you. So please tell your friends about us. We'd love to have them listen. Make sure you talk us up at your shop. Because we want more people to enjoy what we talk about on here. And if you please send us feedback, all that kind of stuff. But anyway, once again, thanks everybody for joining us, guys. You have anything else you want to add?
No, I think we got it. We covered it all.
We're good.
It's a big one.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy Versus.
This has been Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Chris McFeely, and Chris Triplett. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.